Happy Halloween, listeners, and welcome to Wine About History. Today we are discussing the historical Dracula, Vlad Tepes. He is not to be confused with the fictional character that we all know and love from pop culture. So we're going to talk about who was Dracula, the man versus the character, why you probably will respect the real Dracula, and why he was a hero to his people, the Wallachians. Vlad was born in 1429 or 1430. We're not sure. He was the second of four sons to his father, who was Vlad II Dracul. Dracul meant the dragon, and Dracula meant son of the dragon, which is how Vlad came by that name. He was the son of the dragon. His father, Vlad II, was part of a Christian order dedicated to defending Christendom from the Ottoman Empire, which was Muslim. And he was part of that order, which was called the Order of the Dragon. Wallachia, where he was really from, was a princedom near Transylvania and Hungary and Romania. And it's easy to confuse with Romania and Transylvania. He lived, his father was going in between the politics of Hungary and the Ottoman Empire, and his father gave Dracula to the Ottoman Empire as a sign of good faith. He was essentially a hostage. And he gave Vlad Dracul, sent his two sons, Vlad Dracula and his older brother Radu, also called Radu the Handsome, to the Ottoman royal court. Radu converted to Islam and eventually became commander of the Janissaries, an important military group, an Ottoman elite household troops, and he was even a bodyguard of the Sultan. So he became part of the culture there. Dracula hated it. He was imprisoned and whipped and humiliated by the Turks. These years formed the basis of his lifelong hatred for the Turks. He was released from the prison and schooled in logic, literature, the Quran, and the Turkish language. He returned to Wallachia around 1448, and where he found out his father had been murdered by the boyars, a.k.a. the nobles of the region. Vladislav II was a rival, and he was put on the throne by the pro-Hungarian parts of the area, specifically the Romanian governor named Hunyadi. It's hard to pronounce. So he took resources from the Ottomans, Dracula did, and attacked this usurper and tried to avenge his father. This is part of a lifelong struggle between staying the Prince of Wallachia, also known as the Voivodache. I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly. And he had to play his political game to fuel that between the Ottomans, the Hungarians, his nobles, and the church. He came to power in 1448, but was deposed after 2 months. 8 years of war and bloodshed was the price for his seat. Wallachia in 1456 was reinvaded by Vlad. Vladislav was defeated and killed. Hunyadi, that's the guy's name. Hunyadi, the governor of Transylvania, who is the pro-Hungarian governor, he died of the plague at the same time. And it was during this reign that Dracula, okay, Vlad Tepes, Tepes meaning impaler, built his reputation as a monster, as a horrific, nightmarish creature that kind of gave way to the inspiration for the character, although there's some debate about that as well. There's a lot of debates about this guy and who he really was. But before we get into how terrible he was, let's look at what else he did. He created infrastructure to help his people. That's very important. He strengthened their agriculture, he strengthened their military, and he imposed taxes on foreign merchants, making the merchant class of the area stronger. So as a leader, as a head of state, he was actually a very good head of state. It's not easy to, in that time period, to become a good head of state because infrastructure and logistics were so challenging at the time. He also punished the disloyal boyars who kept making alliances with Hungary and then Ottomans and then Transylvania. And they would go in between. And this would cause problems for Wallachia. So the Ottoman, around this time, the Ottoman Empire was expanding into Europe and had captured Constantinople in 1453, which was a huge problem because Constantinople was a Christian area, and this upset the world. It was a huge upset. There is not a modern example to explain to you how to compare the situation to. So the Pope called for a crusade to take back Constantinople. Matthias Corvinus, the new ruler of Hungary, was to lead it. He had recently, Dracula had recently killed two Turkish emissaries for disrespecting him, and it was a tribute matter. The tribute to Ottomans he was supposed to pay called a jizya. The Sultan was enraged by this. And here's what actually happened. The Ottoman Empire was upset with him for not paying the jizya, and they sent these two emissaries who had not removed their turbans because it was not in their culture to take them off as a sign of respect. Dracula supposedly either was angry by this, insulted, or used this as an excuse to kill them. He nailed their turbans onto their heads and sent the bodies back and told the Sultan with a letter saying, "Send cultured men to my court." The Sultan was obviously enraged and sent an army of over 10,000 cavalrymen. It was up to their leader, Hamza Pasha, to make peace with Vlad or kill him. But the son of the dragon was a very good tactician. He ambushed the army in a narrow pass where their cavalry would be useless and used Transylvanian handgunners to slaughter the army. A handgun back then was a big metal tube attached to a big stick of wood, essentially, and you took a flaming brand or a burning cord and stuck it in the hole at the top, and it exploded out whatever was in there. So it was really a hand cannon. But after this victory, Dracula raided deep into Bulgaria and slaughtered Turks there. Sultan Mehmed sent an army of 90,000 men to punish Dracula. Dracula's army was around 25,000 to 30,000 warriors, a mix of boyars, their retainers, militiamen, peasants. So he couldn't win an outright fight. So he used the scorched earth policy, which is you decimate everything and leave nothing for the enemy, because an army travels on its stomach. That's a famous Napoleon quote. And he was just trying to keep resources away from the Turkish army. He used a lot of tactics, essentially guerrilla warfare. He used ambushes. One thing he did was take all the very sick people in Wallachia, people who were sick with syphilis, people who were sick with the plague, who were sick with tuberculosis, and snuck them into the enemy camp. Now, that's a brilliant tactic because he was getting rid of his mouths to feed that were dying and caused chaos in the enemy camp because he got everyone sick there. So the Ottoman Empire's army was several miles south of Targoviste, or also pronounced Targoviste, Dracula's capital. And it was on June 16th, 1462, when Vlad snuck into the camp himself. He was fluent in the language and used to the customs because he lived in the court for so long. And he used this time to gather intelligence, where the weapon caches were, where the emperor was, where his generals were. So he attacked the camp in the middle of the night, just a little after midnight, with the intent of slaughtering the Sultan. But instead, he accidentally killed two high-ranking members of the court, a vizier and another important counselor, while at the same time, a boyar named Gales attacked the rear. For some reason, Gales broke off his attack. We don't really know why. He hit the flank, and then fled. The night raid did not achieve its goal, but it did terrible damage to the Turks and caused a lot of problems and destruction. But Vlad knew that if they mounted a counterattack, he was done. So he ordered a retreat. Amid all the carnage, the Sultan fled and had to be convinced to come back. He was so scared. So 4 days after the attack, the Ottoman Empire made it to Targoviste to find a dead city. There was no one there. No enemy army, no nothing, not even civilians. What they did find surrounding Targoviste was 20,000 Turkish dead, impaled on spikes, 10,000 of them being the cavalrymen that he had sent earlier. And above them all was Hamza Pasha on the highest spike to signify his rank. According to a contemporary historian, a Greek historian whose name I gave trying to pronounce, the Sultan was seized with amazement and said it was not possible to deprive his country of a man who had done such great deeds, who had such diabolical understanding of how to govern his realm and his people, and he said that a man who had done such things was worth much. So about Dracula. Some people... So this was so terrible that they just left. The Ottoman Empire was so terrified by this, they took their army and fled. The Sultan in the lead. So, after this, Dracula was thrown from power again. Some people claim the boyars were rounded up against him by Radu. This is pro-communist propaganda because the communists wanted to paint a prince as a proto-communist, which didn't make any sense at all. But they did change history to try and reinvent it for their ideology. Here's what really happened. A lot of Vlad's followers realized that Vlad could not outright defeat the Turks. So they ingratiated themselves with Radu, who was very pro-Ottoman. And Dracula went to Hungary for help because his nobles had turned against him. The Ottoman Empire was coming back. And he was imprisoned in Hungary. And he was released in 1474 because Radu had died. And the Christendom, the Pope, everyone was pushing the ruler of Hungary to release Dracula. And he became the prince again after 14 years. He was then killed in battle very shortly by Basarab Leotia, an Ottoman-backed Wallachian. And that ends the story of Dracula. So the more you look into this guy, the more you think to yourself that he was more or less a terrible man in many ways. He killed people horribly. He tortured people. But that was very common. He is perhaps a bit more savage than his contemporaries, his peers, but not enough to have the reputation he has. A lot of stories have been made up of him by his enemies, by people who didn't like him, and things get confused in history. Overall, I'd say he was an effective leader, effective commander, and was good to his people, relatively good to his people, despite the scorched earth policy. And that's all you can really be as a leader. So anyways, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And remember, without history, we wouldn't be here.